A four-year-old with a propensity for sneaking off on his own grabs the two family dogs, walks out the front door, and vanishes. While friends and family search desperately, there's no trace of the child or the dogs. Strangely, 5 days later, after the searches have been called off, one of the dogs comes walking home. 5 days after that, the other returns, and yet there is no sign of Tristan Myers. How does a little boy walk away from an isolated home in a small town and disappear into thin air? Over the past 20 years, there have been multiple searches for Tristan, and several times in which it was believed he had been found, though DNA would prove otherwise. In the interim, his mother, grandparents, and uncle have all passed away, leaving a vacancy in the world the young boy left behind. Theories abound. Was it abduction, a disappearance into the deadly wilds of the forest, or perhaps a crime committed close to home? This is Trace Evidence, Episode 111, The Disappearance of Tristan Buddy Myers. Welcome to Trace Evidence. I'm your host, Stephen Pacheco. Today we examine the mysterious disappearance of four-year-old Tristan Myers. Before getting into the case, just a few notes about the show. Trace Evidence is a weekly true crime podcast focused on unsolved murders, disappearances, and other crimes. You can follow the show on social media on Twitter at TraceEvPod, Instagram at TraceEvidencePod, or by searching Facebook for Trace Evidence Podcast. The show is also on MeWe and Minds. If you're interested in supporting the show, as it is a one-man operation, and you'd like to get some Trace Evidence swag, there's a Patreon at patreon.com/traceevidence, or you can donate directly via PayPal. Visit trace-evidence.com for all social media links, donation options, and contact information, as well as thorough information on all episodes. To submit case suggestions, you can visit the website or email me directly at traceevidencepod@gmail.com. Tristan Myers had walked away from his home on two separate occasions. The third time, however, he never returned, launching one of the largest search parties in the history of Sampson County, North Carolina. This is Episode 111, The Disappearance of Tristan Myers. Some people have lived truly challenging lives, dealing with all manner of pains and tragedies, the loss of abandonment, injuries, psychological and physical disorders. The world can be a hard place, but most of the time these things happen across a large lifetime. In the case of Tristan Allen Buddy Myers, he'd experience his share of difficulties and challenges in just the first few years of his life. Tristan was 4 years old when he mysteriously vanished from the home of his great aunt and uncle in the small south central North Carolina town of Roseboro. Roseboro, like many other small towns in the area, had popped up in response to the construction of the Cape Fear and Yadkin Valley Railroad system, which ran between Fayetteville and Wilmington. Despite more than 100 years of development in the area, Roseboro has remained a small backwoods town with a population under 2,000 residents. Perhaps this, in conjunction with Tristan's age, explains why it all came as such a blow to Sampson County. However, Tristan's story actually begins more than 800 miles to the southeast in Ocean Springs, Mississippi. When Tristan was born to Raven Myers on July 16, 1996, his mother was just 15 years old. Raven was not equipped nor prepared to be a 15-year-old single mother, and while there does seem to be somewhat of an attempt by the young mother to raise her son, it quickly became apparent that she was not up to the challenge. Also, it's against Mississippi law for a 15-year-old to keep custody of a child. Raven appears to have had a troubled life, or at least one which presented her with many troubling situations. You may be wondering about Tristan's father. An article from the Chicago Tribune expands on this, writing that Buddy's mother, quote, told police that the father could have been any one of four or five men, end quote. It also goes on to explain that Raven's second child, a daughter, was later seized by the state. Reportedly, this second child, at the age of 3 months, had her skull fractured at some point in time, and Raven blamed it on her roommates. Sadly, Raven's story will come to its own grim conclusion later in the episode, and seems to be yet another tragedy in a growing list of painful and difficult moments surrounding the life of Tristan Myers. Raven's family took up the challenge she was unable to, and Tristan was given to his grandparents, Robert and Sally Myers, who lived in Louisiana, so they could provide a nurturing home to the child, according to the Fayetteville Observer. However, while everyone believed the situation could best be handled by the mature members of the family, this would be the first in a series of events which would ultimately lead to Tristan's troubled life and disappearance. For approximately 2 years, Tristan lived with his grandparents who, to some degree, struggled with the challenge of raising such a young child. However, things were going well until two incidents which would send Tristan packing once again. The first incident nearly resulted in Tristan's death, happening in 1999 when he was just 3 years old. Now, I should preface this by saying newspaper and television reports vary in several ways regarding the incident, though there are a few common threads. In November of 99, Tristan's grandfather, Robert, was working on a car when Tristan was accidentally run over. Some articles say the accident resulted in Tristan suffering a broken leg, second-degree burns on his neck, face, hands, and feet, as well as a laceration in his head, such as one published by ABC News. Other articles have presented the accident as not a runover, but a hit, saying that Tristan received burns to the neck, but a fractured leg instead of a broken one, and there's no mention of a head laceration. The Charlie Project described the accident differently, relaying the story that the accident came as the result of Tristan's grandfather being drunk at the time. All articles seem to imply that Robert was working on a car and at some point got in to drive it. An article written by the Fayetteville Observer explains that Robert was backing the car up to move it when he accidentally struck the then 3-year-old. When asked about the accident in the aforementioned ABC article, Robert explained, quote, "I could have been stone sober. It would have made no difference because I've gone over and over and over in my mind what could have changed that. That was an accident," end quote. In one article, it states that while backing up the car, Robert struck Tristan and wasn't aware of it until the child walked up to him covered in blood. While Tristan was taken to the hospital, Robert was charged with drunk driving, first-degree vehicular negligence causing injury, and cruelty to a juvenile. Tristan had several physical issues to overcome in response to that accident. At first, it seemed that Tristan's grandparents would be fully capable of taking care of him. However, another medical issue would strike, which is what would lead to Tristan being taken in by his great aunt and uncle. A few months after the accident, in 2000, Sally Myers became severely ill due to a battle with liver cancer. While Robert attempted to take care of his wife and his grandson, it soon became too overwhelming, and in hopes of finding a new home for Tristan, he reached out to his brother, John, and his wife, Donna, asking whether or not they'd be able to look after the toddler. At the time, they knew nothing about Tristan and had never met him, though reportedly, they were told he was a well-behaved and kind child. John and Donna discussed the situation and ultimately agreed to take Tristan into their home, located in western Sampson County along Microwave Tower Road in Roseboro, North Carolina. In several articles, the situation in which Tristan was given to his relatives seems a bit bizarre. They drove down to Louisiana from their small town to pick him up, and at least one article, written in the Chicago Tribune in April of 2003, described it by saying John was handed the child and only 3 changes of clothing. Tristan's mother, Raven, seemed disinterested in her son, and in a statement taken by authorities after his disappearance, John stated, quote, "Raven did not show any emotion," end quote, about her son being taken to North Carolina. Within hours of the trip home, Tristan had already received the nickname Buddy from his great uncle. To this day, Articles and headlines about Tristan's case often refer to him as Buddy Myers. While this seemed like a good change for Tristan, which would result in him receiving more attention from his relatives, fairly quickly after arriving in Roseboro, he began to exhibit troubling behaviors. Tristan became prone to angry outbursts, screaming and flailing his arms and fists. John and Donna would go on to describe him as behaving in a disruptive way, and things would only get worse over the first few months that he lived with them before mysteriously vanishing. In several instances when playing with other children, Tristan would become violent, hitting the kids and shouting at them. His outbursts, though, were not limited to others, and Tristan soon began biting himself and scratching deeply, sometimes drawing blood. Donna's sister, Sherry Hicks, told investigators that Tristan had been diagnosed with ADHD. On September 24th, 11 days before his disappearance, Tristan's violence turned deadly when, in an incident, he accidentally killed one of the family dogs. The details surrounding the dog's death are a little scarce, though Donna did give information to investigators regarding that incident. Reportedly, Tristan woke up in the middle of the night and decided to give the dog a bath. In her statement, Donna explained, quote, "He had the dog by the neck and was shaking it. It was old. It may have had a heart attack," end quote. While this story certainly seems believable, reports suggest that one of the dog's teeth was later found in the bathtub, leading to some speculation that the dog's death may have not been due to simply choking and shaking. In a sad recounting of the aftermath, John reportedly told investigators that the dog was buried on the property, and Tristan later attempted to dig the dog up and didn't understand what was wrong with him. He apparently told his guardians that he planned to take the dog to the hospital to get him help. It seems rather apparent that, between his violent outbursts against himself and others, and the incident involving digging up the dog, Tristan was suffering from several psychological issues which at the time were undiagnosed. Not knowing what to do, Tristan was taken for evaluation to psychiatric hospitals in both Fayetteville and Clinton, North Carolina. Tristan was kept in one facility for 5 days, during which time he was subjected to analysis and multiple tests to try and determine what issues he might be experiencing. While John and Donna were hopeful of receiving an answer, doctors were hindered in their attempts to figure it out completely. According to one doctor, it was difficult to test Tristan as he didn't seem to understand basic questions and directions and could speak only a few words. Ultimately, Tristan was reported as being underdeveloped both cognitively and physically, and it was the suggestion of the doctors that he should be placed in an evaluation center for further testing. One doctor wrote of Tristan's intellectual and speech development, quote, "I would be surprised if he could say his name, Tristan Myers, and that he was from Roseboro," end quote. Tristan was taken back home on September 29th, having been discharged as an outpatient. In addition to Tristan's troubling behavior, he had a tendency to disappear. On at least 2 occasions, Tristan exited the home without either guardian noticing. The Myers had a neighbor who owned horses, and reportedly Tristan was very fond of them. In one particular instance, when he snuck out of the home, he was found approximately a mile away by that neighbor, who returned him to his guardians who were, for lack of a better term, confounded by his ability to sneak off, let alone to get so far from home as a mere 4-year-old. According to several articles, Tristan had left the home in a similar fashion in the past, being found once again, but the third time he went on one of his adventures, he was never located. For the Myers, it was a frustrating and devastating situation. It's been reported by neighbors and family, everyone that knew them, that John and Donna had great affection for Buddy and did their best to try and provide him with a good home while navigating the challenges he faced. Donna and John planned to adopt Tristan, hoping to make him a permanent part of their lives. A neighbor, Jackie Cox, told the Greenville News, quote, "The child was nothing but loved," end quote. John and Donna's home was a good place to raise a child, a quiet little town, a house with an expanse of land to explore. The home was remote, just off a gravel road approximately 100 yards from a two-lane road which saw a few passers-by. In a separate building located on their property, John's 80-year-old grandfather, Louis, lived by himself, according to the Rocky Mount Telegram. This is the only home in sight of the Myers. John and Donna believe this was an optimal place to provide him with entertainment and adventure, but sadly, that adventurous spirit may have been what led to his disappearance. Apparently, on the two occasions where Tristan left the Myers home, he had done so through the back door. The second time Tristan walked off took place just days before his disappearance, according to the family. In response to this, and in hopes of keeping a better eye on the child, John installed a buzzer on the back door which would make a loud sound if it were opened. It was hoped that the alarm would alert them the next time Tristan planned to make one of his impromptu journeys. However, on Thursday, October 5th, the alarm was bypassed. Earlier in the day, the four-year-old was taken in for a doctor's appointment. On the way home, Donna stopped and bought some toys for Tristan. Once they arrived home, the two sat down and shared lunch before heading into the living room. According to Donna, Tristan was very tired when they returned, so she put on a Barney videotape while Tristan took a nap in the living room. Donna was watching him, but she was tired herself and dozed off on the couch. Sometime while Donna was asleep, Tristan woke up and gathered up their two dogs, a three-legged chihuahua named Buck, who Tristan slept behind every night, and a Doberman puppy named Sasha, the latter of which had been purchased specifically for Tristan. After waking the dogs, Tristan walked out the front door, bringing the dogs with him, seemingly vanishing into thin air. When Donna awoke and found Tristan missing, she immediately began searching for the child, combing the area and calling out his name, but it was to no avail. Donna went down to the farm with the horses, where Tristan had previously gone, but there was no sign of the child or the two dogs. Within an hour of Tristan's disappearance, Donna called 911 and reported the child missing. The responding agency was the Sampson County Sheriff's Department. Their response was rapid and all-encompassing. A search team was quickly put together involving sheriff's deputies, volunteers, and even members of the military from Fort Bragg, some 30 miles to the west. The search team at its largest involved almost 3,000 people looking for the four-year-old. The search involved both land and air teams, with helicopters employing infrared technology to try and locate his heat signature, but somehow the four-year-old couldn't be located. At the time of his disappearance, Tristan was just over 3 feet tall. The area from which Tristan disappeared was very rural, with a lot of farms, open woods, ponds, and swamp. Over the course of the first week of the search for Tristan, the search party kept growing and they kept combing through thick forestry, sprawling farmland, and the multiple ponds and waterways in the area. Tristan was small and couldn't swim, so the initial belief was that he may have fallen into a pond or swamp and drowned. In one instance of the search, Tristan's scent was picked up by a tracking dog who led authorities to a small pond, indicating this as the endpoint of his scent. However, when authorities drained the pond, there was no trace of Tristan. The search, which had begun the Thursday he disappeared, intensified over the weekend, with the Rocky Mount Telegram explaining that, as temperatures began to drop, searchers were more and more worried about the four-year-old's ability to survive in the wilderness. Neighbors were questioned, the family was looked at intently, and multiple members of the family volunteered to take polygraph tests. At the time, there was a lot of speculation that Tristan's disappearance had to be tied to a family member or close friend. That focus, though, has dissipated over the years, with the family being cleared of any involvement. The search covered a radius of approximately 3 miles, with the Myers home being at the center. Multiple irrigation pools in the area were dragged, while divers went into other ponds and bodies of water. But sadly, Tristan seemed to have inexplicably vanished. Rumors were everywhere, some arguing that a young boy fitting Tristan's description had been found dead in a dumpster, others saying that a young boy resembling him had been shot to death and found in an abandoned home. Neither of these rumors turned out to be true, though it was later suggested that the rumors had done damage to the search, convincing some locals that there was no longer a reason to keep their eyes out for Tristan. Both the Sampson County and Cumberland County Sheriff's Departments fielded hundreds of calls from concerned citizens who thought they had seen Tristan, the dogs, or all three. According to investigators, to date, they have received thousands of tips, but none of them have brought them any closer to finding Tristan. The search was ultimately called off 3 days after Tristan disappeared. However, it was started again after a curious incident. 5 days after Tristan disappeared, there was a discovery which, for a time, gave hope to both the family and investigators that Tristan might not be far away. On Tuesday, October 10th, the Myers dog Buck, the three-legged Chihuahua, came walking back onto the family property. Curiously, Buck showed no signs of having been in the woods for 5 days. He was neat, lacked any kind of dirt or dishevelment, and after his stomach contents were tested, they showed nothing out of the ordinary. Due to the dog's return, investigators came back to search once again, opening things back up for 2 more days, but again found nothing. This, though, was not the last return. 5 days later, some 10 days after Tristan's disappearance, Sasha, the Doberman puppy, also returned to the home, and just like Buck, showed nothing to indicate it had been in the forest or a wooded area for 10 days. The puppy was a bit malnourished, but otherwise was in good shape. As in the case of Buck, the puppy's stomach contents were examined and again showed nothing out of the ordinary. At different points in time, searchers had targeted specific areas. The ponds were examined thoroughly. Cadaver dogs were brought in, but never indicated anything in the wooded area or surrounding landscape. At some point, there was a thorough examination of a nearby salvage yard, according to the Fayetteville Observer, but once again, nothing to report. No developments, no trace of Tristan. 3 years would pass from the last sighting of Tristan and the next development in the case, which would take investigators from small Roseboro, nearly 900 miles away, to the busy streets of Chicago. In early February of 2003, a young boy was brought into Evanston Hospital, identified by the name of Eli Quick. Reportedly, the child, described as extremely dirty, was brought in by a man who wanted him treated for aggressive behavior. Considering the condition the child was in, medical staff alerted the police after the man, later identified as Ricky Quick, threatened to leave. At the time, Quick had a warrant out for his arrest regarding the theft of a coffee machine. Due to the odd behavior of Ricky and Eli's inability to explain several gaps in his past, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children was also contacted. After the child was taken into custody by authorities, a caseworker at NCMEC noted the close resemblance between Eli and Tristan, even down to the fact that both boys had blonde hair, blue eyes, a stutter, and scars on their necks. At the time, there was both a blood test and an examination of dental records, though neither could conclusively identify the child as being Tristan Myers. Eli was 6 years old, the same age Tristan would have been by 2003. Donna and John Myers were contacted and shown images of Eli. They believed the resemblance was close, with Donna telling CNN, quote, "If it's not him, he's got a twin," end quote. In hopes of confirming the child's true identity, a sample of Raven Myers' DNA was taken for comparison. While the family had their hopes up that Tristan had finally been found, the DNA showed conclusively that Eli Quick was in fact not Tristan. Thomas Nair, an FBI agent who became involved in the case, stated, quote, "I wish I were here to give you, and more importantly, the family of Tristan Myers, some good news. Unfortunately, that is not the case. The two children are not identical," end quote. While Eli was proven not to be Tristan, the family maintained hope that he was still out there somewhere. Jackie Jacobs, a spokesperson for the Myers family, told the Charlotte Observer, quote, "It's the news we did not want to hear, nor what we expected," end quote. However, this development, while disproven, did spark interest in Tristan's story once again. A billboard was erected near Highway 24 in Roseboro, hoping to bring more attention to Tristan's case. Some tips came in, but again, nothing solid. Later, Donna appeared on the daytime talk show Jenny Jones, hoping to bring awareness. And while the appearance netted authorities hundreds of calls and tips, all led to dead ends. Even Tristan's mother, Raven, seemed to have a change in her disposition, explaining that in the time that had passed, she'd grown up a lot and now believed herself to be capable of raising her son, saying that if Tristan could be found, she wished to raise and reconnect with him. Unfortunately, Raven's life would be cut short in a bizarre accident involving an argument and a speeding vehicle. In March of 2004, 4 years after Tristan's disappearance, Raven Myers died at the age of 23 as the result of massive head injuries. According to Lieutenant E.B. Dalton in Fayetteville, Raven got into an argument while being the passenger in a pickup truck. According to the investigation, at some point during the argument, Raven opened the passenger side door and leapt from the vehicle, sustaining multiple injuries and massive head trauma. While the 23-year-old was rushed into surgery, she died on the table. I should note, some articles say Raven fell out of the back of the speeding truck, but the official line seems to be that she jumped. Donna told the press that while Raven had seemed to be doing fine up until her death, having turned her life around, she had not been in contact with her for several months leading up to her death. Donna went on to tell the Star News, quote, "I'm very hurt. Buddy's not here. Now he's not going to get to know his mother. It's so unfair," end quote. The Sampson County Sheriff's Department told the media years later that in 2011 they had followed up on a tip which brought them into the swamplands of Florida. While not many details regarding this tip have ever been disclosed, Sheriff Jimmy Thornton explained that the tip revolved around a young man who resembled Tristan. After speaking with local authorities and trying to track down the child in a trailer camp. After multiple camps were explored, the one related to the tip was found. Ultimately, when the child was located, he was not Tristan Myers, and the case remained open and active, but fading. Unfortunately, tips and leads regarding Tristan's case began to dwindle. Soon, days turned to weeks, weeks to months, and months to years, without any news, information, or developments. While the family had suffered several tragic deaths and Tristan's disappearance, John Myers passed away in January of 2015 at the age of 67. John, the man who had opened his home to Tristan and who had been involved in countless search efforts, died without ever knowing what became of the child. In the years after Tristan's disappearance, life changed dramatically for John and Donna. John, at one point, cut down and thinned out much of the wooded area around the edges of his property, hoping that he might discover something and wanting to take his grief out on something, anything he could get his hands on. Tristan had been missing for 15 years by the time John died, making him nearly 20 years old if still alive. Soon, Tristan's great uncle, mother, and grandparents were all gone. The last articles written about the case come in 2017 and 2018, though by this time, much of Tristan's case had disappeared from the media. In an article by the Fayetteville Observer, the loss of the family was discussed, as was the home on Microwave Tower Road. The home from which Tristan vanished is now surrounded by overgrown grass, boarded up and kept behind the warnings of no trespassing signs. According to the Observer, no family could be contacted for their article, and a single name is now associated with Tristan and his disappearance. Detective Chris Godwin, out of the Sampson County Sheriff's Department, told the Observer that while Tristan had been missing for 17 years, the case was far from cold, and he was focused on tracking down the missing child, who would now be an adult. Godwin has spoken with multiple law enforcement officers from differing states, some retired, some active, in hopes of gleaning new angles to approach the case from, but there's never been anything which managed to shake the truth free. Godwin considered researching the area in which Tristan disappeared, though it was believed that were Tristan still out there in the wilderness, something would have turned up by this point in time. Godwin wanted to ensure that people know the case is still being investigated, telling the Observer, quote, "We talk about it quite often. Sometimes people want to know if we're still looking or if we've given up. I want people to know. We have never stopped looking for Tristan, and we won't stop until there's no reason to look anymore. We're waiting on that one good lead, someone who remembers something or has seen something. That's the day our search will end." End quote. Finally, in what I can only call a strange coincidence, 24 years and 7 months before Tristan's disappearance, the town of Roseboro experienced a strikingly similar case. 2-year-old Bruce Sheeran was staying at his grandparents' home 3 miles from Roseboro when he vanished. According to reports of the time, Bruce was sitting in the front yard while playing with a family dog. Bruce's aunt was watching him. Despite massive search efforts, the largest in Sampson County to that day, Bruce could not be located, and based upon several archival searches of newspaper articles, it appears that he was never found. A small, isolated town, 2 children disappear while in the company of their dogs, both being watched by their aunts. While no connection is believed to exist between the 2 cases, it's an interesting curiosity, to say the least. Not many news stories about Bruce exist, but those which do sound eerily similar to the disappearance of Tristan Myers. At the time of his disappearance, Tristan Myers was described as being a Caucasian male with blonde hair and blue eyes, standing approximately 3 feet 1 inch tall and weighing 38 pounds. When last seen, Tristan was wearing blue jeans, a black Carolina Panthers t-shirt, and white Mickey Mouse sneakers. Tristan has scars on the left side of his neck and top of his head. He has a speech impediment. His left leg was previously broken, and he may answer to his nickname, Buddy. Tristan was last seen in the vicinity of Microwave Tower Road in Roseboro, North Carolina on October 5th, 2000. If alive today, Tristan would be 24 years old. Age-progressed photographs are available, and Tristan is listed in both NamUs and the Doe Network. For 20 years, the mystery of what happened to Tristan Myers has haunted his family, the small town of Roseboro, and the Sampson County Sheriff's Department. Over the course of those 20 years, most of Tristan's family has passed away, with cousins and second cousins remaining to wonder what became of the little blonde boy who walked off into the afternoon with his dogs. The area has been searched and searched again. Family has been questioned, neighbors and volunteers have searched, billboards have been erected, and family have appeared on national television shows, hoping to bring awareness. And yet, after all these years, Tristan's case remains open and unsolved. Despite the passage of time, the changing of investigators, and the loss of family, there are still those who hope to bring a conclusion to this haunting mystery, and there are some who still believe that Tristan may be alive out there somewhere, perhaps not even knowing his true identity. True crime is my passion, but even I need the occasional break. So when I feel I need a mental palate cleanser, my go-to refresher is Best Fiends. Best Fiends engages your brain with challenging and fun puzzles. The game presents bright colors, fun challenges, and cute little bug characters battling against evil slugs. I love the art style and the satisfaction I get destroying those slugs and marching through the levels. While Best Fiends is a challenge, it's a casual game that anyone can play, even if it's made for adults. I often play while waiting for appointments, chatting on the phone, or just chilling out on the couch. I just made it to level 136, and I don't know what I enjoy more, the challenges of the puzzles, the fun of the game, or the thrill of getting further and further. I really enjoy being able to share my progress on social media while competing with friends to see who can get further along the path. Oftentimes, the game notifies me when I pass a friend, and I really like the thrill of the hunt. I really love how Best Fiends updates every month with new levels and events, so it never gets old. I just finished collecting Easter egg rewards in the game, and I'm looking forward to seeing what's next. I also get a kick out of earning new fiends, leveling them up, and seeing what new ways I can approach the puzzles. Engage your brain with fun puzzles and collect tons of cute characters. Trust me, with over 100 million downloads, this 5-star rated mobile game is a must play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's Friends without the R. Best Fiends. Four-year-old Tristan Myers wandered away from his aunt and uncle's home, disappearing somewhere in the wilderness of sleepy Roseboro, North Carolina. Despite extensive searches and large pushes for national media attention over the last 20 years, he's never been found, and in that void reside many unanswered questions. How can a four-year-old get so far away so fast? How were searchers unable to locate him? And how did his two dogs find their way home 5 and 10 days later without even the hint of having been in the woods at all? Truly, Tristan's case is a mystery, and like so many cases involving children, it's painful and difficult to examine. Over those 20 years, there haven't been a lot of theories developed. For the most part, examinations of the case result in only 3: that Tristan was abducted, that his family may have been involved, or that he was lost in the wilderness and was victim to one of the predators or pitfalls, many of which would be too much for a child to overcome. Starting at the top, we'll take a look at the possibility of abduction, one theory which hasn't received as much attention as you'd imagine in a case like this. Typically, when you're looking at the possibility of a child abduction, there's a handful of characteristics that come to mind. Among these are neighborhoods, highly traveled roads, walks to and from school, or nighttime grabs from within the home itself. None of these seem to fit when it comes to Tristan. Roseboro is an incredibly small town, one in which a strange vehicle or unknown face is likely to be remembered. A town where many residents know one another and the houses are spaced out, not the kind of stacked on top of each other streets you see in most American neighborhoods. There wasn't a home in view from the Myers property. The road they lived on was gravel and dirt, and the nearest 2-lane road was several hundred yards away. That road, by the way, isn't exactly heavily trafficked. A lot of times when a child is grabbed, it's a crime of opportunity, though in many cases, the abductor has tracked the child over time and made a plan of how to execute that abduction. In Tristan's case, this is highly unlikely. He'd only been living at the home for 55 days, and when he disappeared, no one even reported seeing a strange or unfamiliar person or car in the area. The Myers themselves certainly didn't report anything out of the ordinary. Roseboro isn't exactly the kind of town an abductor would be trolling, looking for a child to take. With how small the population is, how remote the homes are, it seems highly unlikely that someone may have just been driving around the quiet roads on the off chance that they might find a child to grab. Obviously, truth can sometimes be stranger than fiction, but when it comes to Tristan's case, investigators, family, and friends consider the possibility of an abduction unlikely unless it came under specific circumstances. Is it possible that Tristan wandered down to that 2-lane road and was spotted by a passerby who seized the opportunity? Could he have been spotted by someone in the woods, along a dirt road, who simply couldn't pass up the opportunity? Surely, these are possibilities, but the odds don't generally favor them. Typically, if someone is planning to grab a child, they're going to ensure they aren't going to get caught, and so off-the-cuff abductions seem a little out of character, especially in a small town, though I'm certainly not suggesting that things like this don't happen. One detail which has made many consider this theory revolves around the dogs. They didn't seem like they'd been wandering around the woods for 5 or 10 days respectively. Some argue that Tristan and his dogs could have been grabbed at the same time. Maybe someone pulls up, offers the child a ride, and the dogs hop in with him. Remember, not only was Tristan 4, but he was psychologically and physically underdeveloped. It's certainly possible he could have fallen for the stranger offering candy, as the trope goes, but you know what I'm saying. Some believe the abductor may have released the dogs either that same day or days later, with them returning home never having been in the woods. Of course, that would have been challenging to do considering all the searches, but remember, the first dog didn't return until 2 days after the searches ended. When it comes down to the abduction, it's certainly not something that can be ruled out, but it's a theory few have put a large amount of stock in. Sure, there have been multiple incidents in which children similar to Tristan have been spotted, but in each of these cases they've been identified and were not Tristan. Surely this suggests that it's entirely probable that someone grabbed the little boy and drove off with him, maybe to raise as their own, maybe to do something far worse. But there hasn't been a single clue or piece of evidence to make that connection. Sadly, however, there's been little, if any, evidence to make any connections. The abduction theory will always exist, but whether or not this is what happened remains a mystery, and for many, they believe the truth may lie closer to home. Following that thread, we move into the second theory, that someone in Tristan's life may have had more knowledge about what happened than they've ever revealed. In the case of a child's disappearance, especially one such as Tristan, who not only exhibited erratic behavior, but who was also shuffled through the family, it's difficult not to take a look at the family. Usually when that's done, you've got someone who won't answer questions, someone who resists the investigation, someone with odd behaviors, a record, someone who won't participate in the searches, something to indicate the possibility of darker intentions or hidden truth. None of that exists in this case, though. Tristan's family were extremely cooperative with investigators. They took part in all searches, fought to get attention on the case, were involved in countless interviews, appeared on television shows, and traveled whenever a child was believed to have possibly been Tristan. While the child certainly presented challenges, John and Donna seemed focused to raise the boy as their own, going so far as to enter the early stages of planning for adoption. Whenever she spoke to police or to investigators, Donna was always very hopeful about finding Tristan and expressed her hope for his return and her pain at his loss. She believed Tristan was still out there and he was gonna return to her someday. Certainly, Tristan experienced many difficult situations and tragedies in the short 4 years that he was around, and yet he was loved and welcomed by John and Donna. Neighbors and friends all reported that he was their focus of attention, that they loved him, and that they were absolutely devastated by his disappearance. Within an hour of Tristan's disappearance, he was reported missing and the search began. That search never stopped, and one by one as family members passed away, there were others to pick up the torch of their search efforts. Even to this day, family members long for answers and still speak with the media in hopes of keeping up with the case and talking with investigators. It doesn't seem like the kind of situation where anyone in the family was involved. The circumstances are all to the contrary. The family offered to take polygraphs, they gave statements to authorities whenever they asked, they did everything they could to help investigators to try and solve this sad and difficult mystery. They even kept searching for years after the official searches had stopped. If it wasn't the direct, malicious involvement of a family member, some have considered the possibility of something on the periphery. Maybe an accident covered up, maybe a mistake in judgment or simple negligence. While all are possible, again, there doesn't appear to be anything to make that suggestion. Investigators looked at the family as you would expect them to in a case like this, but since the early days of the investigation, they have never had anything to say about the family which would put them in a bad light. There was never the announcement of a person of interest, never even a shred of suspicion was spoken about in the media. One would imagine that if members of the family were considered someone who they thought was likely, someone would have said something by now. So many of them are gone, it would be unlikely that anyone would be hit with any kind of a lawsuit for defamation, but authorities are often tight-lipped when it comes to cases involving children. While I understand looking at the family, there doesn't seem to be anything here to make that more likely. John and Donna worked hard to try and help Tristan. They took him to doctors, had him evaluated, and dismissed his bad behavior as the result of a child with slow development struggling to transition into a new home. There doesn't seem to be a single instance of them saying anything negative about him, and even in the light of some of his more violent behaviors, hitting other children, the incident involving the death of their dog, they never said a word about it to the media. Those situations were only expressed in interviews with authorities, which came out later to the public's attention. It's an interesting theory, and one which has been investigated, but there doesn't appear to be any answers there. So that brings us to the final angle, that Tristan may have wandered off into the wilderness and had been injured or killed in a fall, a pond, the swamp, the attack of a predator, or some other dangerous situation. Let's face it, we're talking about a 4-year-old who has a tendency to wander, a young and small child with a propensity for going off on his own. Is it really that hard to consider that he could have gone off, as he had done 2 times in the past, but this time went into the woods instead of towards a neighbor's farm? 3 feet, 1 inch tall, 38 pounds. How far could a 4-year-old really get over the course of a few hours? The furthest record we have of his travels comes from the second time he walked off, leading him to approximately 0.5 to 1 full mile from home. While we don't have an exact timeline for that incident, I don't think it's difficult to imagine that a 4-year-old would face a lot more of a struggle when dealing with the muddy, rocky, dense terrain of a forest. We know that tracking dogs once followed his scent to a pond, at which point the trail ended. That pond, among many others, were dragged, drained, and examined, but there was no trace of Tristan. Perhaps the 4-year-old waded through the water and came out on the other side, effectively eliminating his scent trail. Maybe the weather turned or the wind blew in a different direction, sending his scent elsewhere. Tracking dogs are highly attuned to the scent they are following, but many natural occurring weather patterns, winds, and rain can alter their ability to effectively track. There's a lot of predators out there in the forests of North Carolina. Bobcats, mountain lions, snakes, just to name a few. A 38-pound child wouldn't present much of a challenge to any of these animals, and while a snake might result in the child being left where he was bitten, any other number of larger predators were certainly capable of carrying him off somewhere, and it's anyone's guess exactly how far one of those animals might travel with their prey before slowing down or stopping. Tristan vanished in the middle of the day, but by nightfall, certainly the chances of an animal attack would have increased. It's also important to note that it was early October, the temperatures were dropping, and many animals were looking to gather up food for those barren winter nights sitting on the horizon. If it wasn't an animal attack, there are a multitude of other threats out there. Steep hills, sharp rocks, little crevices and holes a child might fit into that an adult wouldn't. During their searches, they used infrared cameras mounted on helicopters, hoping to find Tristan's heat signature. I've often wondered, considering how small he was and how cold it was getting, how hard it would have been to see him, let alone if he had fallen into cold waters. Microwave Tower Road spans the gamut: farms, forests, swamps. There's a lot of different areas that a full-grown adult might struggle to make it through, let alone a small child who reportedly couldn't swim and didn't know his way around. While the Myers home was certainly beautiful and in a lovely area, it was also very isolated. It's so isolated, in fact, that Google Street View didn't even map out the part of Microwave Tower Road where the family lived. The nearest intersection to the home came where the road met State Road 1251. Having looked at satellite imagery of the area and photos supplied in newspapers, you're talking about an extremely dense wooded area with multiple ponds and what I would describe as a pretty vast swamp area located through the woods within 2 miles from the home. The swamp itself, referred to as Big Swamp, is quite extensive and appears very treacherous. Had Tristan managed to get to that swamp, there's no telling what could have happened to him and if he had fallen in or not. Thick, murky, muddy waters, certainly enough to provide a challenge for even a strong swimmer. Sadly, of all the possibilities in this case, the likelihood that Tristan fell victim to something in nature is pretty overwhelming. Between animals, the forest, the swamp, and many other pitfalls, deep holes, crags, any number of places, the possibilities are endless. And while there remains the hope that he is out there, somewhere, waiting to be discovered, maybe a victim of abduction, living under another name and not even knowing he's missing, the tragic answer may lie closer to home. Tristan has been gone for 20 years now, and there hasn't been a single hint, no tip that has led to an answer, no anonymous calls, no suggestions of anything. A true mystery in the middle of a small town, so much similar to one from 24 years earlier. While police continue digging into the case in hopes of a break, this may be one of those tragic stories that only the dense greenery and thick swamps can present the answer to. Short of new evidence, a sighting, a finding in the forest, or an abductor's arrest, the disappearance of Tristan Myers will remain open, unsolved, and very cold. If you're looking for more information about the disappearance of Tristan Myers, there is some out there, newspaper articles and interviews, but honestly, there is not a vast wealth of information. Tristan is listed on NamUs, case number 6442, as well as NCMEC, case number 897039. He's also on the DOE network under 4638DMNC. If you have any information about the disappearance of Tristan Buddy Myers, please contact the Sampson County Sheriff's Office at 910-592-4141. The agency contact person is Lieutenant Chris Godwin. You can also contact the FBI at 704-377-9200. What do you believe happened? Tweet me at TraceEvPod, email me at TraceEvidencePod@gmail.com, tag me on Instagram at TraceEvidencePod, or comment in the Facebook group. I've had a couple of people ask me about the availability of Trace Evidence merchandise. There's a couple of places you can go. You can go to traceevidence.threadless.com to see a wide selection of t-shirts and stickers and other items. You can also just go straight to the website trace-evidence.com and click the merch link in the header, which will provide you with links to places where all Trace Evidence merchandise is available. Did you know the True Crime Podcast Festival is taking place in Kansas City, Missouri this year? I'll be there representing Trace Evidence along with hundreds of other true crime podcasters. If you visit truecrimepodcastfestival.com/trace, you'll receive 10% off your ticket. I had a really amazing time there last year, and I love meeting listeners, so I'd love to see you there this year. Remember, truecrimepodcastfestival.com/trace, or simply use promo code TRACE at checkout. It's time to thank our Patreon producers. Special shout out to Tara Doble, Alicia Lorraine, Angie Dodd, Brittany Bivens, Brian Kemmerling, Roberta Jansen, Krista Colvin, Diane Dyson, Eamon Brady, Bacon Bits the Cat, Pamela Coburn, Abigail, Brett Eady, Kevin Bonham, Emily Smith, Emma Vachon, Gerard Lopez Barbosa, Jessica, Laura Dickinson, Linda Halcrow, Nick Mohar Schurz, Megan Cotter, Quinn McBreen, Randy Weiland, Robbie Blue, Tom Archer, and Tracy Woods. If you think your name should be on this list but it's not, please contact me as Patreon is often terrible at organizing the lists properly. I want to thank you for listening to this episode, and I hope you'll join me next week for another unsolved case on the next episode of Trace Evidence.